This is She Served Too, a show designed to highlight the challenges, the resilience, and the lived experiences of women veterans. Here's the host of She Served Too, Elizabeth Herrera.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to She Served Too once again. This is Elizabeth Herrera. I am your host, and I'm very excited to be with you all this afternoon. Very excited because we have a very interesting show for you this afternoon. Joining me is Roseanne Welch from Stevens College, our MFA program, and she will be discussing all things Masters of Fine Arts, a great conference that she's having, and the intersection of women in film and veteran stories. So welcome to the show, Roseanne. Can you hear me?
I can, and thank you so much for inviting me. It's an excellent topic and an excellent audience to be presented.
A little bit about Roseanne. She created a set of history of screenwriting courses and teaches courses in one-hour drama. Her television writing credits include Beverly Hills 90210, that's right, Picket Fences, ABC News Nightline, and Touched by an Angel. Dr. Welch edited When Women Wrote Hollywood in 2018, named runner-up for the Susan Kopelman Award honoring the best anthology, multi-authored or edited book in feminist studies by the Popular Culture Association. She co-edited Women in American History, a social, political, and cultural encyclopedia, named to both the 2018 Outstanding References Sources list and to the list of best historical materials by the American Library Association, and wrote Why the Monkeys Matter, Teenagers, Television, and American Popular Culture. Welch has also published chapters in Torchwood Declassified, Investigating Mainstream Cult Television, and Doctor Who, New Dawn, Essays on Jodie Whittaker Era, 2020. She serves as book reviews editor for Journal of Screenwriting and on the editorial board for both Written by Magazine and California History Journal. In 2018, she was elected to the executive committee of the International Screenwriting Research Network for a two-year term. You can find her talk, The Importance of Having a Female Voice in the Room, from the TEDxCPP on YouTube, and other recorded lectures on her YouTube channel, Dr. Roseanne Welch. Welcome. Oh, my gosh. You know,
Thank you. You're
so personable, and I sometimes forget how incredible your career has been, how incredibly accomplished you are, and wow, what a powerful voice for women you have been and you continue to be. Roseanne, you're just incredible. You really are. I'm so happy to have you on the show. And I wanted to just, there are many reasons why I wanted to have you on the show. We do focus on women veterans, but we've had women veterans be part of the MFA program that you lead, that you have developed in California, and I want to talk about that. You have an exciting opportunity coming up this week here at Stevens, Gender and the Female Gaze. I think this is actually something so magnificent, and I can't believe it's happening right here in Columbia. So I want to talk a little bit about that. I want to talk about the alumni, the stories that women veterans are writing, the importance of having that voice being amplified, the connections that they make and the stories that they tell, and and any other resources and things that you can share with our listeners. So tell us a little bit about let's talk about Gender of the Female Gaze. How did that came to be?
I have been a part of this Screenwriting Research Network. It's a gathering of scholars from around the world. I met them first in Madison, Wisconsin, 10 years ago. It was the first time they had a conference in the United States. And I've gotten more and more involved by attending conferences in other countries. I've been to Vienna and New Zealand and Leeds, England, and Milan. And at one point, we were talking about what the next set of conferences would be. And I thought, well, how would you folks like to come to Columbia, which is really the perfect sort of version of Americana for a European? Mm-hmm. And everyone found it very interesting. So I began planning. It's a three-year process. received a bid for the events, and then, of course, the college had to approve, and thankfully, President Lynch is wonderful about these kinds of opportunities. Some schools, when they host it early in the semester before students come in, and I wanted to do it while the students were on campus because I wanted them the chance to come in and listen to these various scholars. We're all talking about the importance of screenwriting and the kinds of stories that are told by women for women. And we have stories about women from all over the world. We have Indigenous American screenwriters, and we have an Estonian scholar who will be here talking about the history of women writing in Estonia. We have folks from Mexico and Finland and Brussels and Italy and the UK. And I just think it's a wonderful thing to bring to the students here at Stevens who are interested in how women are being portrayed around the world. So I brought it up. President Lynch said yes. And all of a sudden, that was 3 years ago, and it starts on Wednesday night. And I'm in the midst of the final preparations.
Fantastic. So for those of our listeners, which I can't imagine who may not know, but there may be people who, you know, maybe are new to understanding the concept of the female gaze. What exactly is the female gaze? And why is it important for everyone to be acquainted with it and understanding what it is?
We have spent forever having art given to us, whether it's painting or whether it's film and television, through the gaze of men. And that often means that female characters, of course, we go back to painting. We know that that meant men were looking at the nude bodies. They were looking at the way women were portrayed. Even if they weren't nudes, they were wearing jewelry. They were showing off the beauty of the money that their husband had. Mm-hmm. And so as we go through art and we get to films, we saw in some of the earlier days, there were a lot of women involved in the early days of film, and the female characters had a lot more to do. But when film became more of a business than what we kind of called the Wild West in the early 20s, they didn't know it would be very profitable. But when the studio systems came to be, they kind of invented middle managers, and they started to decide who should write and who shouldn't. And we lost a lot of that female voice to men. And I love men, right? I'm married to a guy. My son's a guy. But they saw the stories that interested them, and they saw women through their gaze. So we saw a lot of ditzy women. We saw a lot of women who, you know, needed men to help them and save them and that sort of thing. And at the beginning of maybe the late 70s, you'd get a little independent film. You'd see Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, which was about a young mother who was trying to be a singer but had to, you know, step down to take care of her son and figure out how many of her dreams was she allowed to follow and how much did she have to give up for this obligation. And of course, she loved her son. That was one of Martin Scorsese's early directing movies, a rare movie to have a female lead. So when we think about the female gaze, it's the chance finally for women to write about and represent their real world, whatever that might be. And I find it interesting because that we're seeing, for instance, of course, Barbie. We're having someone present on the Barbie movie and talk about what that really means. It's not just that, though, because if you take the other group into consideration, that's all we're really asking for. So, for instance, in thinking about how female military personnel have been portrayed on television, I have to go back to a show called China Beach. It was in the late 80s, early 90s, which was about female nurses in Vietnam. And it was a brilliant show written by a man, John Sackett Young, but he saw the world, he saw those female nurses as complete three-dimensional characters who were having this incredibly intense experience. And it still was such an amazingly truthful telling when I look back at those reruns. So you don't have to be a woman, but you have to be willing to look at the world through female eyes and respect the lives of women.
Right. And through that very, you know, and it's a very unique perspective when you're telling the story from the lens, the experience, the bias, the power, the privilege of being a man. And then it gets much more complex when you are, you know, a certain category of man. You're a white man. You're sitting in a position of power. You're sitting in a position of, you know, a certain interest. I mean, it gets much more complicated. You're only going to appeal to a certain demographic. And how does that, I always get into my philosophical questioning, how does that then shape society, number one, and how does that impact how people feel about themselves? Not just women, but then marginalized communities. It really does have ripple effects. So the female gaze is part of a larger conversation also about representation and making sure that voices and people are heard and stories are being told accurately. And the power of that is just immense. It can connect us in ways, and it can heal us in ways that are unprecedented. Would you agree?
I think that's very true. And I think it's very important that you bring up, of course, other marginalized voices. Women were the large sort of body of marginalized voices for a long time. And then more women have been coming forward. Thankfully, more women of color have moved into the world of show running, being in charge of shows and being, if you will, the TV auteurs of their stories. So we're getting, you know, things like Grey's Anatomy, and then move forward with all kinds of shows from the Shonda Rhimes, they call it Shondaland. But we're seeing that come through a lot of other women.
Yes.
And the representation is so important. It's also true when we think about Indigenous peoples.
Yes.
There are a couple of shows. A lot of people know Reservation Dogs. But also, there's a really brilliant show on AMC called Dark Winds, and it's based on the writing of Tony Hillerman, who wrote about detectives, police working on Navajo reservation in the 70s. And it just now has been realized as a TV show, and I think they're doing a lovely job of giving us a real look, a real respected look into the lives of people on that reservation. So once you open one door, the other doors slowly start to open. So every new story we can tell allows another group of people in that door.
Isn't that beautiful? That's how liberation works. Isn't that beautiful?
And, it does.
And I think that's probably why the Barbie movie has touched everyone in such a powerful way. And I think it's really united us in such a powerful way, because it wasn't exclusionary. Everybody had a voice in that movie. You know what I mean? I felt seen, heard, validated in that movie. I felt for Barbie. I felt Barbie had a powerful voice. I felt deeply for her and her place in the world. You know what I mean? So I think that was a brilliant way to share that story. You know,
I agree. And I think what's pretty is that we didn't even think about the fact that patriarchy can hurt men as well.
Absolutely.
Because anytime we pigeonhole people and say you have to be this way or that way, I've talked to my son is 25, and he and I would see Barbie together actually, and a bunch of his friends had already seen it, male friends. And what we talked about, which I think is coming out from that movie in more conversations, is that we're moving happily into a future where if the idea was you needed to marry a man who would take care of you financially, now there are more women in college than men. And so we're going to be in a world where women marry men whose education might be below them. They have a bachelor's and that's what they do, and they've been very happy in their job. And the woman maybe has a master's or a PhD. We're not marrying men to take care of us. We're marrying men to be partners in life.
Right.
Obviously, in a world of heterosexual people, we're marrying partners, not caretakers. And that's a new space for men to inhabit that I think is a good thing for them.
Oh my gosh. And I have two sons as well. And I always worry about what their identity, what is their identity going to be? What are the pressures about their identity is going to be about? And how can I support them in finding their own identity and discovering, not finding, that they have to discover their own identity, that it's not based upon societal expectations. So they know that they are comfortable with their strengths, and then they know that they have so much to offer in partnership with anyone, whomever they decide to be in partnership with, but that they have value, that they are good listeners, that they... they're very, even though they're little boys, they, for some whatever reason, and I can't explain it, they're very, very much boy boys. It's the only way I can explain it. And honoring that, that they are rough and tumble, and honoring that masculinity that they have in them, and that that's a beautiful, beautiful thing to be celebrated, and that I don't want to, you know, overcast on that. Celebrating all parts of who they are, that they have something unique and valuable to bring to the table, and that they are loved just the way they are. Does that make sense? Versus
entirely.
I don't have, you know what I mean? That I don't, I hope that they find partners that don't expect them to change or to, you know, provide for them, that there is a partnership, that there is, how can we build something together? And I think the society, like you said, the patriarchy does such a disservice to men that I think it psychologically breaks them. And we don't talk about that enough. I think in feminism and in the feminist circles, we do talk about it, but I just don't think we talk about it enough on how the patriarchy just breaks men and probably why.
I think it's true. And I think now that, you know, nobody wanted the pandemic is a terrible thing, but yeah, it forced us to do one thing, which was that for years, women, largely feminists, wanted flex time in their work, because they wanted the chance to see their child in a play or whatever they had to do, be a room mom if they needed to, make a Halloween party at school. But we didn't have that. And then, of course, the remote work of the pandemic gave it to everyone. And a lot of men, a lot of fathers suddenly went, oh, I could see my son play soccer at 2 in the afternoon and then do work from 8 to 10.
Yes.
I want that. And I don't think they'll give it up now.
Yeah.
And that's what we needed to make people realize that parenting is a joint job. It is not that you're babysitting your children if your wife is away, that sort of nonsense. Yeah. So we're breaking down that patriarchy step by step.
I know. It's so exciting. It's actually a remarkable time to be alive. what a time. Let's talk a little bit about the stories of military women, because I know that you have several alums that are veterans, and the Writers Guild provides a partnership with you. Can you talk a little bit about that?
The Writers Guild has for a long time run a program for veterans who are interested in writing, and it's a free program. You have to apply, of course. You have to have written some things, and you can find it all on the Writers Guild website, the WGA. Website, and they, because we started our program in 2015, we were connected with some of the folks. I do some lectures for their group, talking about pitching, talking about putting together an outline and that sort of thing. So, of course, people who were interested in moving forward came to our MFA. There were other MFAs they've gone to as well. We were lucky enough to get some really amazing women. One of them is a woman named Rashan Dozier Escalante. And if anyone in your audience has watched either SEAL Team or in the last couple of years, The Equalizer, which I know isn't military, but a police show, Rashan has moved from our MFA into being first a staff writer, and now she's a co-producer. And it was very interesting to talk to her about what stories she could bring to SEAL Team, because she had her own military experience. TV shows like to have a couple of folks who are on the writing staff who have been, if you're a law show, you were a lawyer. If you're a cop show, you were a cop once. So, of course, there's a space for military female stories to be told, and she has done quite well coming out of the program, so we're very excited about that. We have a couple of gentlemen. We take male applicants as well, and they, too, came out of the Air Force, one of them, and the Marines, the other one, and they use their GI Bill to get their graduate degree, and then they have the Writers Guild backing to help get moving up through the business. So a couple of our gentlemen right now are what we call writer's assistants, and I would call that a sort of a writer's apprenticeship. You sit in the room when writers are talking about stories and you take a lot of notes, and then you're the one who keeps charge of, oh, yesterday somebody had a great idea, what was that? Oh, you know, Mary or, you know, Beth said this, oh, let's add that to the scene. And then you work with the writers as they put their stories together, and after a couple of years, usually then you get offered your own script, and that's how you begin on the ladder of becoming a full-time writer on a show. So we have two gentlemen, military gentlemen, who are now at that stage. So it's been lovely, and we've had several other women who come through the program. A couple of them came to us first, and that's how they discovered the Writers Guild program, and now one of the ladies is in that program. So it's been an interesting back and forth between us and the Guild. But it's lovely to see, because we know those stories need to be told. There's another woman who was on Army Wives, which was also, of course, a very big show. One of the gentlemen who's coming to speak at our conference, he's going to do a keynote speech on Friday morning, is Jeff Milvoin. And he executive produced Army Wives for 5 years and was very involved in making sure that the people on his writing staff had previous military experience so that show could be as realistic as it was.
And that's what I love about you, that you're so passionate about connecting people and making sure that the connections are being made, that participating in the MFA program, that you will connect the veteran with the Writers Guild and find ways to make sure that the student applies to see if they can get into that program, which I really do appreciate.
Oh, definitely.
And you know, that's what we want. We want to make sure that that institutions, that organizations understand that sometimes veterans, we do have certain challenges in our confidence. And it's not that we're not capable, it's that sometimes we psych ourselves out. We have complex PTSD, we struggle, we have challenges. And sometimes all we need is a little pep talk. We need a little push that says, you can do it, you can do it. And then once we have that, the sky is the limit. Then we're going to be able to push through and soar to the highest limits.
I think that's true. We do have another woman who graduated a couple of years ago and has written a screenplay that a producer is interested in. So it's the beginning of the stages in terms of the movie. But it was based on her personal experience that had to do with working with a vet who had once been homeless and how the military helped him regain his confidence enough that when he was finished with his service, obviously he was able to move into a full-time job. And that was a beautiful story that she knew from firsthand, obviously having worked with that gentleman.
Incredible. So we're going to take a little break. Upon our return, we will continue our conversation with Roseanne Welch on film, the MFA program at Stevens, the conference that we are having at Stevens College, Gender and the Female Gaze. And you are listening to KOPN 89.5. And this is She Served Too. Welcome back. This is She Served Too at KOPN 89.5. Welcome back to the show, Roseanne.
I'm happy to be here.
So when we left off, we were talking about a little bit about the stories of veterans in your MFA program and how your MFA program does a really great job at facilitating the transition into the Writers Guild. Can you share a little bit more about the experiences female veterans have had in the MFA program? Any additional stories that you have of success in the program?
Sure. I mean, again, Rashawn is our biggest one, and she actually has returned to us as a mentor, which is difficult when you have a full-time writing job, but she found it so important to be given this opportunity and this training that she now works. Usually she'll take two or three students a semester because it's a lot of work, but I always hear from the students how amazingly rigorous she is, but they all know that that means she's preparing them to succeed in a very rigorous business, which is, interestingly, very useful to people who've been in the military because rigorous is the military's second name, right?
Yeah.
So having that opportunity is wonderful. Another one of our graduates was a nurse in the military, and she was on two different tours in Afghanistan. Mm. It interested me because she had been an officer, and she was working with another woman in the program who was not. And it was interesting because she was figuring out that relationship because she had been trained so long that she didn't have to deal with people who weren't officers, to see them work together and sort of readjust to civilian life just in the program as being peers now on this new level of learning.
That's
was a beautiful
hard.
Thing. I teased them that would make its own TV show.
Yeah. Yes, it would. And, you know, I think that there are so many layers and stories to be told about also how the patriarchy moves within the military system within itself. I mean, that has thousands of stories to be told within itself, because I always say the military is a microcosm of what's happening in our society at large, and everything is just amplified within the military, whether it's sexual violence, whether it's misogyny, whether it's sometimes how women, we can be our own worst enemies. We perpetuate systems of misogyny and patriarchy and violence. And there are stories to tell within that system too. There's just so much.
Very much true. I keep waiting for someone to do a film about the tailhook situation. One of my first books was actually about women in aviation and space. And that's when I first read and did a lot of research on that. And I was both shocked and saddened and amazed it hadn't made the news in any great way.
You lost me. What did you say before that? The what situation?
The tailhook scandal.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, my goodness. It was in the Navy, I guess. I have to go back to Navy flyers. There was a scandal in the 80s, maybe. I'll have to go back and look at my very own.
Now I have to share with us, please. Because, see, yeah. I didn't even know about this.
It was a sexual harassment situation. There was some event that they would bring all the flyers to, and mostly, of course, it had been men in the years past, but it had become women. And in this case, all the women who were there were made to go through essentially a kind of a run of men down a hallway who would slap them on the butt in other ways affect them. And it was very demoralizing. None of the women had really mentioned it in a couple of years. But then some women did, and the argument between the women, which I found fascinating, because I don't know which side I would fall on, some of the women wanted to bring this up, of course, and have the men prosecuted for it, and of course change this old, terrible tradition. And other women thought, no, you just have to put up with it and get through it, and you'll prove to them that you are worthwhile. And wow. I thought it was very sad that women were arguing with each other about, no, if you open this up, we're all going to look like we're stupid and we mm-hmm. dealt with it. And, you know, I would rather be tough and scream and shout. And it was very sad. Many, many women. And I remember one of them was the sister of a woman who was on an MTV video jockey, if you remember when that was a thing. And because her sister was more famous eventually as a flyer, sadly, I remember her plane crashed, and immediately the military blamed pilot error. But because the sister was famous enough and caused enough stink, they had to go through a couple of full investigations, and they did have to come out and apologize to the family and say, no, it was a mechanical error on the plane. The woman herself is not a bad pilot.
Wow.
But the instinct was to blame the woman first and move on from that.
Wow.
So it scared me that you had to have essentially a famous sibling to make people pay attention to you.
Yeah, and that still happens. That still happens now. I actually have an anecdote very similar to that. And I had a woman tell me, a woman personnel tell me that I made a complaint about a military officer, and I said, this is unacceptable. And she got really angry. It was along the lines of what you were talking about. She got really angry, and she said that, how dare I bring that up? She said that these were her words, that the military has been like this for 100 years. And if I think that I'm going to come here and change things, that I have lost my mind, basically.
Wow. Yeah. but we have to change things.
That we just need to keep the status quo, that this is the way things are, and we just have to blend in with the guys. And I was like, I will not comply with this. This is not okay. This is not appropriate, and it's not acceptable.
That doesn't show respect, right?
No.
If the whole thing that we're being graded on or judged on is, can you fly a plane or not? And I certainly can't fly a plane. I have to be, it's funny. We had a woman, you just reminded me, we had a woman in one of our early classes. She had been a helicopter pilot in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember sitting around a table when we were talking about ideas for different scripts. And there was a gentleman in the group, lovely man. He was a very well-accomplished writer, but he didn't have a graduate degree. So he was getting one so he could teach at a better college, because you have to have a graduate degree to teach at a four-year school. So he was sure of himself. He knew he was quite a well-respected writer. And I had noticed that he hadn't given this woman much attention.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle of the discussion about different stories, she brought up, because her story was based on an experience she'd had while flying a helicopter, and I watched this man's eyes change in front of me. And he spit out, you flew a helicopter?
Yeah.
And she said, of course. And she went into some of the details about this scary story she'd been involved in, which had to do with nearly crashing.
Yeah.
And from that moment forward, he treated her differently.
Yep.
And I thought, I can't believe it took you knowing that she had a skill you don't have before you could look across the table and think of her as an equal.
Yeah. And I have a story on that, too. I have a friend who was a fighter pilot, and she was incredible. Granted, she looked like a Barbie doll. She was gorgeous. I mean, one of the most beautiful people inside and out that I've ever seen in real life. Gorgeous, competent. She decided that being a fighter pilot was just a little too stressful. So she decided to come and to our unit and fly, I think it was helicopters or C-130s, an old plane. And she was doing it part time. She was a reservist at the time. And we were getting the troops ready to go to Afghanistan. And this boom operator, so he was on the back. He was throwing a fit. When I tell you he was throwing a fit, he was complaining to everybody who would listen that he was not going to get into a plane with her because he did not trust her as a pilot. And he would tell everybody, and I'm like, Are you listening to yourself? She is a trained fighter pilot. Oh, I just don't trust her. I just can never get on a plane with a woman pilot. I'm like, you are just basing this because you're just so intimidated by her sexuality, by the way she looks. She literally looked like a Barbie. She even wore hair extensions. Like, she was just obscene about her sexuality, which made it so much more obscene in a good way. Like, she was just so upfront with it. I loved her for it. Yeah. And he just made an assumption and an idea that she was awful. She was fine. She was great.
Well, of course. I'm not a fighter pilot. I know. They don't let anybody do that.
And yeah, she was here flying, helicopters or C-130s, whatever it was. And he was like not having any of it. He was just so indignant and outraged. Can you believe that?
You know, I would like to say that I cannot believe that.
Yeah.
But
I have so many stories, Roseanne. I can't even, the misogyny is real. And it's just, it cooks. They feed off of each other and it perpetuates and it permeates. And it's like, oh my God. And then what it does, it has a lasting impact in the psyche of women. And if you're like me, who has complex PTSD, you internalize a lot of these things. And I've worked really hard to try and overcome my own, traumas and barriers, but it'll creep up. If I have a traumatic event, I have to consciously, I have to work really hard to not have the internal voice of self-doubt and negativity not creep up back, because those experiences, they become really traumatic. They, if you're with a group of men and they look so intimidating and they're so high ranking and you're just the staff sergeant and you're like, okay, well, I'm trying to tell you what to do, but wherever I go, they kept calling me Sergeant Boobs everywhere I went.
Oh,
and it's like, I got no respect. And even though I know that I was doing a good job, I felt like I was doing a great job. My commander thought I was doing a great job, but in their eyes, I was put in the position because, the way I looked, and that was really painful.
And I think that's why telling stories, even going backwards, like it saddens me that you've not heard of the Taylor Hook situation.
I'll bet
some of your listeners have never heard of the Mercury 13.
Mercury 13. I'm going to look that up.
When we were having the Mercury program and they were deciding on who would be the first astronauts that we would have in the United States, there was a woman who, Jackie Cochran, and Jackie Cochran was one of the first female pilots to break the sound barrier. She ran in a lot of early pilot races. She was second, pretty much to Amelia Earhart. And she was a rich woman who had taught herself to fly a plane, and then she did all this wonderful stuff. Well, when they started to test men to be astronauts, and they went through all the different tests, could you spin around for circles for hours? And could you be isolated in a, tiny space for a long time, et cetera, et cetera. This woman, Jackie Cochran, paid to have 13 other women who had been pilots of one type or another, a lot of these women who won many races going across the country, going across the ocean, she paid to have all of them given the exact same tests that men like John Glenn were going through, right, who would be our first astronauts. And the women tested better than men.
What?
They could be isolated longer. And, of course, you pay less because you pay by weight for what we send up in space, and women generally weighed less than men. So it would have cost us less to send women to space. But immediately the government got worried that you can't have, a female hero be the first person in space. So they added one thing to the requirement of being an astronaut. And that one thing, and we're talking about, 1960s, was that you had to have been a test pilot in the military.
Wow.
And as you know, no women at that time had been test pilots, so all of those women were shut out of the program.
What is this, sometimes I just feel like there's just this visceral, violent, I don't even know if it's hatred, it's just like disdain to see women achieve their dreams.
Being from Stevens, that one of those women was Wally Funk.
I know, yeah.
She's from the Mercury 13.
I didn't know she was from the Mercury 13. I did not know that.
And I think not hearing that history, again, women should know that women were capable of that. They simply were not permitted to do the job, but they had the qualifications to do it.
That is, we need to make a modern film about that.
We do. We need our own version of that, right? But we've seen how many versions of the astronaut story, the male astronaut story.
Oh, my gosh. Can we, like, knock in Hollywood, somebody like Steven Spielberg or somebody to, like, because I feel like now the time is ripe, especially after the Barbie movie, to make a movie about Wally Funk, and then she finally achieved her dream, and, you know.
Wouldn't that be great? And all these women. One of the women in the group was named Jerry Cobb, and they thought about adding her. I don't remember why she didn't make it in space this recent time, but when she couldn't, they used her for about a year afterwards and called her a female astronaut, but they really had her travel around the country and talk about the astronaut program. And when she finally figured out they were never going to let her do it, she quit. And because she loved being a pilot, she flew medical missions in South America, bringing medicine to far-flung places for the rest of her career, just because she loved flying, and that was the way she could do it all the time. So all these amazing women we don't get to hear about.
It really is remarkable, and I would encourage anybody out there, whether you're a man or a woman or anything in the spectrum, to just take a moment and think about how the patriarchy has robbed us of our dreams, whether you're a man or a woman, and confines us into these spaces and these roles of the things that it thinks it wants you to be, but it's not necessarily who you want to be. That is just tragic. It's almost another form of slavery, if you think about it.
Yes, because if you're not allowed, we only have one life. Mm-hmm. And if you're not allowed to live the one that you want, then who can say what you should do with your life?
That's the story. I'm now like I'm stuck on the Mercury 13 story. Like, that's just, it's so evil, mean-spirited and evil and vindictive and nonsensical. Oh my gosh, it's just tragic.
It was all to keep women out of the program. And of course, eventually we let women into the shuttle program. Of course, then we had Sally Ride.
Yeah.
And I know that in reading some books about her, and actually one of our MFA alums is writing a biography of her right now. I remember reading that in that year when there were 8 or 10 women first admitted into the astronaut corps, the Christmas present that year was a golden tie clip. Nobody had thought about you giving that to, I don't know, 50 men and 8 women. And some of the women did talk about the fact that when they were in the capsule, the simulated capsule practicing, if men had been in the capsule before them, they would have posted some awful pictures from Hustler magazine inside to throw off the women when they were doing their tests and such things.
Why?
And they had to learn how to be focused on the mechanics of the piece and ignore those pictures. And they didn't, again, really tell anybody about it because they didn't want to look like they were complaining.
It seems so immature. I always thought about it when I saw it happening in the military, like, this is so immature and petty and ridiculous. Like, what are you, 12? Like, don't you have a mission, a job to do? Don't you have bigger things to worry about? This is what you're worried about? My boobs? Like, really? Like, this is what you want to talk about? I don't know. I always thought it was ridiculous.
I mean, I feel bad but then, you know, we allow people to be that way. We have to shut them down when we have the chance.
Yeah.
And the more people to shut them down, again, of course, that behavior eventually becomes pariah behavior.
Yeah. But at the same time, it really is challenging to be a strong woman. So I do want to acknowledge how difficult it is, because in my case, it hasn't been easy. I have to deal with my mental health constantly, you know, because I always have this inclination to speak up, I'm very justice inclined, and I've always been this way. And it comes at the peril of my mental health, and it can be really lonely because, you know, people have a predisposition for safety and wanting to keep the status quo, and there are many reasons for that. So it takes an immense amount of courage and a little bit of insanity to wanting to go against that, but it is totally worth it. Just make sure they have enough resources, mental health resources, to manage your mental health, and to have appropriate coping skills to do that. You know, the VA has a lot of great therapists. I'm just always blown away by the behavioral health team here at the VA. They do great work and they have a great team, and they're doing great modalities on helping people learn how to cope with their stress, with their mental health, with their traumas. And that's so important for you to have good coping skills, because otherwise you can be taken down easily. The world is a mean, cruel place. And if you don't have the right tools in your toolkit, you're toast.
I've often said that if we could only find a way to help more people feel secure in who they are, we would have less of this childish behavior.
Yes.
Because it seems to me it comes from a place of insecurity, and that's odd. We don't think that men are insecure, but clearly they are.
Mm-hmm.
I've had bosses before, and, you know, Hollywood is not that different from the military, I hate to say it, but it largely
probably
was run
worse
by men for a long time. And I tease my students, I'm not doing this on a program, but I have learned how to cuss.
Yeah.
Because when you want attention from men in a room for them to listen to your idea, you throw out a few expletives and suddenly they all face you, shocked that you spoke that way, and now you have the reception. I thought, really? Really? This is how I had to do this. I couldn't simply begin speaking and you would recognize that you should listen to me because I'm here as a paid, you know, peer of yours. So those kinds of things are, you know, tricks. But I've known women who don't want to learn that language.
Yeah.
They don't want that to be part of their persona. So it's wrong that they aren't allowed to be the complete self and be creative. They have to play a game in order to get that next step.
It's what feels safe for them, I suppose. And everybody has their own time and whatever they're comfortable with. But this is another thing that makes military women so great at a career in Hollywood. So if you're interested...
Yes.
If you're interested in the fine Master of Fine Arts, if you're interested in screenwriting and writing TV shows, maybe being a Hollywood director, writing a movie or writing for TV shows, Stevens has a great program for you. So what would be the requirements for anybody who is interested in something like this? Where would where are the classes held, first of all? Is it all online? Do you have to go in person? And then how do you even qualify to get into the program?
We have a couple of lovely things. We're what we call a low residency program, which is what really helped. Our mission was to bring more women into telling mainstream stories.
Woo-hoo.
And that includes video game stories, because there's a lot of work in video game writing. So the first thing we did was, being low residency, you don't have to come any one space all year. You go twice a year to Los Angeles, and we teach you classes at the Jim Henson Studios.
Oh, the Muppet Babies.
Originally Charlie Chaplin, the Muppet Baby Studio, but in 1909, it was Charlie Chaplin's studio, so it has wonderful Hollywood history. So we use that for our classroom, and so people are in Los Angeles for 1 week in August and 1 week in January, and they do the rest of their classes online from home. So the women, of course, who have jobs or families, they're not going to move to L.A. full-time in order to learn this, but now they can do it online. They each get a mentor, a coach, who works with them to write a couple of scripts each year. By the time they're done in the two-year program, they've got about five or six scripts, which you need what we call a portfolio of work to approach an agent, to approach a producer and see if somebody's interested in your product. And so we provide that in that two-year period, all the training. You don't have to have experience. You have to be able to tell stories. And the way we get that from, first of all, you have to have your bachelor's.
Yeah. And anything, can it be like a nursing?
Anything.
A nursing bachelor's degree?
Exactly. In fact, the nurse who was in Afghanistan had a nursing degree.
Oh,
didn't
nice.
Have an arts degree, because we're going to provide that.
So you can be in the military, technically, and do this.
Yes, because you could be anywhere. As long as you could come for those 2 weeks a year, you're fine.
You can take 2 weeks of leave a year.
Yes, and that has been a really exciting thing. In other places, that's what online, you know, is offering to people. You could be. So we have a student who was with us from Estonia this year. She wasn't in the military, but she found our program. She wanted to learn what we call the Hollywood way of telling stories and bring that back to her own students there. So you can be
wonderful.
Anywhere. And what you have to provide is 20 pages of writing. So sometimes that's been poetry. Sometimes it's been essays. Sometimes it's been people just writing short stories. They don't know the formatting of the script, but they can write a story that tells me that they are good with characters, that they have an interesting idea about plot twists, you know, that they have a nice way of writing. I mean, nice in terms of it's interesting, good use of language, but you don't have to know screenwriting at all. That's what we're going to point people to. So yeah, the 20 pages of writing and the rest is basic application.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So it's been so amazing to have you on the show, Roseanne. So if anybody's interested in applying, just make sure you visit the Stevens website and look at the graduate degrees. Again, Gender and the Female Gaze is happening this week. If you want to register, you still can do that this week as well, Roseanne?
Until Wednesday.
Until Wednesday. So make sure you go onto the Stevens College website to do that as well. Again, it's been a pleasure. I just admire you so much, and I'm just honored to be in the vicinity of the place. Yeah, I really do. I really, really do admire you and respect you, not only in the work that you do, but in the person that you are. You're just lovely. So,
and I will have to, you know, I have to say the same thing back. I think it's a brilliant program that you're running here at Stevens.
Thank you.
It gives military women a chance to step back into education, which is what brings a lot of women to the military, as we know.
Absolutely.
So to have this wonderful safe space in which to re-enter that world, it's really important.
Thank you so much. Girl power. All right.
<There you go.
laughs> So that's all the show that we have for today. And we will see you next month on She Served 2 on KOPN 89.5. I hope everybody has a great evening. We'll talk to you soon. All right.